This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, welcome back to the Podcrashed. This week, we're telling the story of Operation Deep Freeze 1971. Right before we get started, I just want to say that the research for this episode was done by one of our listeners, Deb, who you will hear us rave about throughout the entire episode. Her research is very much ongoing. If you or anyone else knows more about this story, there's going to be an email address where you can send the information to her in the description, along with some corrections. Because the research is very much ongoing, there are bound to be some things that I get wrong in this story. Watch out in the description for corrections. Thanks for listening.
So, immediate shout out to Deb, our dear bestest friend of the BFF of the show. Deb, this was like, she reached out to us, like so many of you have, because you're all like the best people in the world. And Deb like reached out and just said, like, let me know if you ever like, you know, need help researching anything. And I said, like, there's this story I've been interested in, but I've never found anything on it.
Yeah.
Deb, literally, guys, 18 pages of notes,
amazing.
My notes, because she sent, like, it's unbelievable the research she did. I mean, incredible.
Yeah.
A superpower. I just don't know how this even happens.
Well,
it's amazing.
And I'm like very excited to go back and be able to look through all the emails because.
Oh, I know.
Just all of the emails are like, oh, sorry, 4KC, 4K, which is obviously great because that's how it's set up. But I'm like, damn, this story is about to be fire. I just want to read it.
I know.
I want to read it.
Oh, I know. And there's, I feel like so sure that I'm not going to be able to include all the information. I just feel like there's no way I'm going to like remember everything. And so probably guys like listen to the like little bit after the show is over where like, I just like the kind of like, I don't know, like bye part, mm-hmm. because I'll probably end up sticking some like this happened and next or this and this and this like cool stuff in that one. So there's many bonus facts
cool. In
this story. So, Antarctica.
Oh, yeah.
And for reference, so it's June right now, and we're recording this.
Yeah.
And we did the Air New Zealand flight, like, Antarctica story in, like, November.
Yeah.
So, that was when I was like, two episodes about Antarctica, wouldn't that be, like, can't do those too close together. I was in no danger of doing them too close together.
It worked out perfectly, honestly.
So well, everything is fine.
Great.
So this, like, going back to Antarctica, our favorite continent, yours and mine, the frozen south. So people, humans, started to like poke around and explore Antarctica in like prior to the 1900s, like very late 1800s. They were kind of like, I think there's something there. And the first person to ever set foot on Antarctica was a just like a seal hunter who just was like, what's this?
Right.
But that was it. People actually started to like actively like send expeditions and explore it on purpose in 1901. And so the North Pole, right, where you and I live, and all of our northern hemisphere folks, the northern hemisphere, especially in the New World, like above Canada, there was during the 1800s a lot of exploration up there because they were just believed with all their heart that there was going to be a way to get from the east coast of North America to the west coast of North America by water, without going like the long way. Mm. They just were so sure it would be there, the like Northwest Passage or whatever. They just believed in it for, I don't know why they were so sure it would exist, yeah. but they were looking for that up in like the North Pole. So when they wanted to start checking out Antarctica, they used some of like that knowledge and, you know, resources, icebreaker ships, just some of the stuff that had been developed in the search for the Northwest Passage I hope Northwest Passage is the right word. I'm not going to be able to look it up right now, yeah. but looking for that, you know, that technology and stuff they used to try to explore Antarctica.
Yeah.
Antarctica is unlike the North Pole, right? Where like people have lived up there, right? Mm-hmm. Like people have lived in like the northernmost parts of Canada for, you know, thousands of years. Like there's places like up there, Antarctica, very remote, right? Like super, super remote. Yeah. And what's down there? Who knows? Let's check it out. Like the people obviously died a lot, frankly, right? Like it's very dangerous. It's very cold. Yeah. It's very difficult to explore that. But people wanted to. So in 1928, Admiral Byrd, who I think we talked about in a different context in another conversation, but I no longer remember what the context was. He was the first person to fly a plane over the North Pole. And he was like, this is the only way to go, guys. I don't want to walk through this tundra like planes all day.
Right.
But obviously, it's some very tricky flying, to say the least. Right. Yeah. So he flew over the North Pole in 1929.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah. That 1929. Oh, so he did that. And maybe maybe we'll do a story about that episode. Maybe we'll do an episode about that in another 6 months. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it happens. So, but he checked it out, thought that was the way to go. You got to do planes. But flying in the South Pole is like very, very, very challenging flying, right? Like to say the least. It's super, super arid. It is like a desert. All the snow that falls on it just stays there, right? But it's super, super arid. The air is like thin. It's like we talked about in the Air New Zealand story, like it's just white, 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 everything. White snow, white ice, glacier, white sky, just everywhere. There's no nothing too, right? Like, what are you going to do if something goes wrong? There's just no nothing anywhere. So people were like, let's put some stuff there. And in, so 1929, oh no, like World War I was really bad, but it made planes better. Let's fly a plane over the South Pole. And then, oh no, World War II, really bad. And so after World War II, when everybody is trying to figure out how to like play more nicely and we're in the like, you know, space race and things like that, there's also kind of like a scramble for Antarctica. And a lot of different countries want a piece of it, but also want like a piece in the like exploration of this extremely remote, extremely foreign, different continent.
Yeah.
So in the 50s, so shortly after World War II, late 40s, early 50s, different countries started to either figure out like how they're going to unilaterally explore Antarctica and maybe claim a piece of it, or at least try to. There are like a lot of different claims in Antarctica, but like, does anybody...
Right. Does anyone
agree?
Really? Yeah. Right.
You know, yeah. Like, maybe not. Yeah. So, but they also, some countries like teamed up to do different things. So maybe, I'm sure a lot of you are aware, there's like a bust of Lenin at the South Pole. That was the Soviets, like, you know, exploring it. And the US is not about to let the Soviets.
Never.
Do something anywhere without them getting in on it. So in the 1950s, people got together, started to figure that out. The Soviets had their own station that they started to develop, and the U.S. wants to have a station. But there's, if you've ever watched Flat Earth videos, I'm sure that you have like heard of the Antarctic Treaty, right? That's basically the idea that there's no military action. There's no, we can't go to Antarctica and then have like a war there to fight over who gets what territory. And we've actually, that's stuck. Like that actually
worked out pretty well.
Right.
One of the few.
So the US is figuring out like, okay, if we're going to have like an actual research station there where like we American scientists study Antarctica, if that's what we're going for, we need a way to get stuff there. We need like a support staff to create a place for people to go, like all of the like supplies, resources, just everything that goes into having human beings survive and work in these incredibly extreme conditions. And the U.S. in 1955 started what they called Operation Deep Freeze, which
oh my god, 10 out of 10.
So Operation Deep Freeze, the Navy, which as I'm sure all of you will notice is a part of the military, not like a science division, but the Navy, because they're not going there to like fight anybody, they're just using the Navy's like logistical like knowledge, their resources, the planes, boats, whatever they have. Like the Navy is the support staff for the scientists and for the research that's happening down there.
Yeah.
So 1955, we're doing the very first Operation Deep Freeze mission. The Navy's supporting. They have to do everything, everything. Like the first year, they literally like flew the planes, like landed on the ice and then just slept in the plane. There's nothing out there.
Right, yeah.
They just had to like start from scratch in a way that's really hard to imagine, right?
Probably. I mean, they not so hard for you right now.
That's true. We'll talk about that at the end. That just showing up and being like, there's nothing here. Like,
let's do it.
Make something be here. Yeah. So they ran the missions every year. And so it's the Southern Hemisphere, which means that like the seasons are reversed from the Northern Hemisphere.
Right.
So October to February is like summer down there. Or that's the warm time of year, I guess. Not, you know, air quote warm. The sun is up for like the hottest part of that, white everything everywhere, this tundra, daylight all the time, or you would love it. All that vitamin D, all that nice cold air, you would love
it. So good.
You would love it. There's not a ton of like precipitation to deal with in theory, not like compared to other places in the world. Antarctica is like the biggest desert in the world. There's not a lot of actual precipitation, but the storms that do happen come out of nowhere and hit super hard. Right, so you're contending with that when that comes up, but hopefully, you know, you kind of hope it's not going to be like that too much, right? Like, and the precipitation like stays, right? Or at least it used to, right? Just the snow falls and then it's just there forever.
Yeah.
So the extreme cold, like the hottest hot days of the year in January are like 60 degrees on the coast. That's partially because on the coast, you're getting like the temperature impacts of the wind, like breezing and sometimes blowing like warmer air. But that's also what can create the storms, you know, at the coast where you kind of want to be.
Right.
At the North Pole, you know, like negative 60 degrees, like, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just pretend that means something to you if you Celsius. Negative.
Aren't those the same though?
Celsius,
is it negative 60? Or negative 40?
It's like negative 40, 6 or something. It's like a random number. But yeah, it's pretty similar. Yeah. Like we, and again, if you have no context for that temperature, it's not something that you can fully comprehend anyway.
Exactly.
Right. Like I have no concept for what negative 40 is like.
Exactly.
But very cold. Yeah. So we're running these missions once a year, going down there. I mean, once a year, it takes like months and months, yeah. right? But they, you know, the Navy like flies planes down full of scientists and researchers, and they meet now, like after the first year when they fly down there, they're meeting up with people who overwintered there and have been like totally isolated in darkness for months and months. And so like the day like day one of Operation Deep Freeze every year, this is an exciting yeah. day, right? Like these the scientists who are going for the first time are stoked because like, oh my gosh, like gonna get to live in Antarctica, yeah. right? The people who have been isolated there all winter and like didn't see the sun for a long time and haven't seen a different person in forever, right? Like they're excited because new people and new stuff are coming, or maybe they're leaving or whatever, right? Like, so like the first day, I don't know, like if you did, like, did you go to summer camp?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like what I get in my yep. head. Like the day one of summer camp every year was just like electric.
Yeah,
so exciting.
And then you're dead by the end. Like just, what? You're just dead by the end. You're just so tired.
Oh yeah, totally. Right, right. So just that like, the thrill. So our story actually begins in 1970. We're doing Operation Deep Freeze 1971.
Okay.
So that the 71 actually like starts in 70, if that makes sense.
I see. Okay.
So
yeah.
On October 8th, 1970,
wow.
the big day, the Navy has 7 planes full of supplies and hundreds of scientists, and they are going to send these planes one by one in like a caravan, right? Like one's gonna, every hour they'll send a different one. So for 7 hours they're gonna like, they're loading up these planes, everybody's getting on board, and one goes one after the other. And then that gives people in Antarctica, like, right, where again not a ton of manpower, yeah. right, but they have time to like get stuff off the plane and like give them a minute to like breathe and orient and stuff like that. The airport, air quotes, is not equipped to handle a ton of traffic, right. right? And in fact, so there's 2 runways, I guess is what we'll call it.
That's
they in Antarctica.
Yeah.
And
that concept is crazy.
Two different
a runway
right,
in Antarctica.
And it's for two. Yeah, like 2 different like aircraft.
Right.
So these flights take 11 hours and they head out from our dear Kiwis in New Zealand,
okay.
right? So it takes off from New Zealand because that's as close as you can get. And they go fly for 11 hours. So it is, that's not short.
Right.
Like no. you have to feel so incredibly remote when you're there.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. So one boom, 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 boom. And because they're flying over just wide open ocean and then toward a frozen continent of almost nothing,
yeah.
Where the weather can be unpredictable, they get pretty frequent updates on the weather throughout their whole flight.
Okay.
And they provide, like, as they're flying, if they run into any weather, then they send that information back so that subsequent planes will be aware of it.
Yeah.
Everyone is so excited,
oh.
and it's just so good. The Navy squadron that like does the support for the scientists at like McMurdo Station in Antarctica, the like American station, are called the Puckered Penguins, and that's
oh.
great.
That's so good. There's so many good like names
it.
in this story.
Oh, so many good. Ah, oh, it's just so many good things. The planes start to depart from Christchurch at midnight. So plane number one goes at like 12:01, October 8th, 1970. Baby, what a day! The first and last planes, the first plane and the last planes, are both Lockheed Constellation C-121 aircraft. The first one, the first plane that's going to leave at midnight and be the first one to get there, is named Phoenix. Mm. Great. Love it. Mm-hmm. Has a beautiful painting of a phoenix on it because amazing.
Detail matters, okay?
Like, details
matter.
They do. And it's just, I don't know, you just don't get to, again, like, it's like if you're going to camp and the bus to camp is like all painted.
Right.
Like, great. Yes.
This is what I came
experience.
Here for.
Thank
yeah.
you for doing this. Yeah. The last plane that's going to arrive, the very last one, the other Lockheed Constellation, is named Pegasus.
Love it.
Love it. Beautiful, gorgeous aircraft.
No notes.
No notes. A beautiful flying horse. A beautiful flying horse on the tail. And the puckered penguins. There's paintings of little penguins for each year. Every year that this aircraft makes the flight.
Oh,
they
God.
Draw, they like paint another penguin on the door.
That is
like,
the most 70s thing I've ever heard. Like, that is true.
10 out
love
of 10.
And peace and happiness. Like,
love,
the
peace,
details.
And happiness. Oh, it's so good.
It's beautiful.
It's so good. The like Lockheed Constellation itself, like as an aircraft, were made from 47 to 58. So this aircraft is, you know, like
older.
An oldie but a goodie. Like she's, you know, just
seen some life.
Carrying on that like post World War II spirit.
Right.
Just let's go.
Yeah. Nothing's stopping her.
The middle.
I said nothing's stopping her.
Nothing's stopping her. Nothing's stopping her. She was not made, like our girls, these constellations, were not made necessarily with Antarctica in mind.
Sure.
So they have like normal landing gear, like regular old landing gear. And so they're going to land on the runway that is like the most like a regular runway.
Yeah.
The middle planes, so plane 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are all... C-130 Hercules. They're less attractive. Does that mean I wrote less attractive, which I feel like is a sentence I've like never written.
We're
but
sad.
That is
like,
that's what the notes say.
Right.
That's what the notes say. I'm so sorry, Hercules.
It's okay.
But it's fine. They're still being produced to this day. This is a plane where like I think most people would like look at it and be like, ah yes, a military plane.
Okay.
Just a nice regular ass military plane. It's great. Sorry, Hercules, you're great.
We love
you,
Hercules.
I don't want to be a jerk. These planes are like ski equipped. They have ski blades over, like chunked, like Legos over the wheels of the landing gear, and so they can just land. They land right on the ice, right on the glacier, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They theoretically, I guess, could land anywhere that's like flat and ice, right? But they, there is like a, they picked a spot, and where they would land. So that's like the ice runway. The Constellations, like because they only have wheels, no skis, they have to land on the runway.
Yeah.
So from midnight on. Boom, Phoenix, first plane, goes hour by hour by hour by hour by hour. And right around 8 a.m., our beautiful, elegant Pegasus is ready to roll.
Beautiful.
And she's born in 1953, born for this day like every other.
Yeah.
She has been going to Antarctica for 6 years.
Wow.
This is number 7.
She's a
Orange.
Vet at this point.
She's a vet. She's an old pro. She's here. That's why she's at the end of the line, because she's keeping everybody else in line. She's got this. She has 6 little penguins, and when they land, they're going to paint a 7th penguin on her, and we love her.
Yeah.
On board, there's 80 human souls on board. No animals. I guess the plane itself I'm attributing a soul to. So,
right.
So 80 people on board, 12 crew, 68 passengers. The passengers are like scientists. There's like a Lockheed engineer, like just different.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Nice people.
Yeah.
It is a good idea.
Yeah.
Cause what are you going to do? What are you going to do?
You can't call anybody.
Right. What are you going to do? like row to see you.
Right. You gotta roll deep. Prepared. You gotta roll deep to Antarctica.
Yes. The pilots, there's three pilots, and we only have two of their names, unfortunately. Maybe. So the captain's name is Cliff, and this is his third year doing Operation Deep Freeze. So great. The first officer is BJ. Second first officer, I just don't know what his name is. I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I want to know. If anyone out there finds it, please tell us. There are two navigators, two flight engineers, two loadmasters, and one radio operator.
Wow, okay.
A lot.
We're stacked.
The only other name, one of the navigators' name is Bob, which is great.
Bob, we love it.
I think that the name Bob should make a comeback.
I agree.
Right? So
Megan's husband's name's Bob, Bobby, but they call him Bob. We call him Bob.
Oh yeah.
It's
his
a
name
great
is Bobby.
It's a great
that.
Name. Bob is
it's such a good
yeah,
name.
Yeah, it's an underrated name.
It is.
It's like a solid
so
name.
So that's like 12 crew, no flight attendants, right? It's not
right.
like that. These are 12 crew because it takes so many people to like navigate a flight like this.
Yeah.
Literally, right? It's a lot of work. It's very long. It is right around 11 hours. So just I mean, realistically, you're going to want to trade off and take some turns,
right?
But also, it's like complex flying, right? They want lots of brains working on getting this plane on the ice safely.
Yeah.
Super long. Compasses don't work because it's South Pole. There's like all that weird stuff.
Oh God,
and
right.
again, this is like... this plane, God bless her, Peggy, our girl, born in 1953, right?
Yeah.
So she doesn't, you know, she's doing her best
yeah.
with what she's got. But we're going to get her down there safe. So ready to roll. They take off. Now every single aircraft is in the air, just flying through the sky. And I just, again, like, I don't know. I just can feel like the electricity I feel like from this story. Like it just
oh my God,
seems
yeah.
so exciting.
Yeah.
So exciting.
And I think it's hard to like feel like I think it's hard to feel that way as an adult. Like you feel it a lot as a kid, right? With holidays and family things and
yeah.
like traditions. And as you grow old, it's like harder and harder to continue to feel that way. So this just
yeah.
feels like extra special that they get that electricity. Like
right.
we're doing this for the first time, you know? Like that, it
right,
must feel
right.
incredible
and
to
just,
be on this plane.
Oh, so good. So, so good. And like, even again, like the people already there,
yeah.
right? Who, like, I mean, no matter how much you love Antarctica, you got to be, you just spent all winter there. You got to be like ready to see a different person
right,
or like
right.
eat Cheetos or whatever. You know what I mean? Just something. So they are up in the air and at around 6:30 p.m., around noon the first plane starts to like land. So Phoenix lands,
okay.
no problem, lands on the regular runway. God bless her, she's here.
Wow.
It's happening.
That's
new
amazing.
Planes, new people. We're oh so exciting. And boom boom boom, right, about an hour after one after the other, right, about an hour between each landing. Everybody scrambles, like unpacks, you know, hugs,
yeah.
gets excited, takes pictures, whatever, right? Like gets to their quarters, I don't know, right? Whatever's happening, right? So by 6:30-ish, the first six planes have landed. It's just our girl, Peggy, in the air still. And she's getting close. Everybody's arrived safely. Everybody's unpacking, reunited, tired, excited. Pegs is going to be here soon. But from the air, about half an hour away from the runway, our boys flying Pegasus can see a massive white wall of blizzard
oh,
rolling
no.
into their path. They are half an hour away. So on this flight, because it is so long and because there is nowhere else to go, once you head out, you have to land in Antarctica or nowhere. That's it. You have to land, right? And so there's the point of no return is what it's called, right? Around the halfway mark where they basically have to decide, like, do we feel good about continuing? And being the last aircraft should be quite a benefit, right? Because if the plane, if the planes in front of you had had to turn around, then you don't even have to get to the point of no return. You can turn around and try it again tomorrow, right? But this is the last plane. And out of nowhere, 30 minutes out.
Oh, no.
They can see with their own eyes this wall of snow. And they can see, like, in the distance, like, they can see Antarctica and they see this blizzard.
God.
And they... The only thing they can do is, like, race the blizzard and just try to land before it shows up. So they keep flying and fly right into this blizzard because there's no way around it. There's nowhere else to go. Yeah. They fly into the blizzard. Fuel is obviously low. They try to, like, navigate. Like, again, they've got 12 human brains that know about planes, like, not even including the Lockheed engineer on this plane. Right. Like, all of this, like, all of them are looking at, like, they can't see anything, right? It's just snow. So even more extreme version of that, like, all white everything, it's just even more impossible to see anything through the snow. And they're so close. So they're, like, looking at, like, their navigation, looking at their navigation tools, looking at everything, like, just trying to find it. They should be, like, right there. They should be, like, on top of the field, and they just can't see anything. They can't see anything. Jeez. Except snow. Nothing. They're talking on the radio, like, just trying to get some kind of guidance or just anything anyone can think of. They basically get lined up with where the runway should be and they try to land.
Yeah.
And they, like, come down, like, fly low, hoping that, like, okay, if we get close enough, we're gonna see something. They get down low and still just see snow. It looks no different below them than it did 1,000 feet in the air. It's just nothing. You're just flying through a snow globe. So they hit the gas and, like, go back around, right? Because there's, what are they gonna do? Like, what are they gonna do?
Well, can I ask, are they in contact with anybody right now? Like, can they?
They are. They're talking to McMurdo.
Oh, yeah. Right. Okay,
there is, like, an air traffic controller. Yeah, so they are talking to them, but all they can tell them is, like, didn't see it. We had to go around, right? Like, this is a very, very powerless situation.
Right. I guess there's nothing really to communicate.
The crew on the ground who had been working all day, right? Electric, but also a lot of work, right? Packing and unpacking and all of that, right? It's a lot of work, and this is the last plane, and they had seen, like, the blizzard coming from them, and they just had to try to, like, stop unpacking and focus. They started to focus all of their attention on trying to keep the runway clear, trying to keep the snow off the runway. So when the plane tries to land, it even can land. Again, the cold is impossible to comprehend. It is so, so, so cold that as the snow falls, if it sits for even, like, a short period of time, it will just freeze to ice. Oh, and you'll just have instead of a snow drift on the runway, which would not be great, you will just have an ice, like, pile of
very
ice
bad. Yeah.
In your way. And this plane doesn't have skis. It has regular wheels, normal wheels. the wind is blowing and blowing, and the snow is falling and falling and falling, and the people out there working trying to keep the runway clear for their friends in that plane, they are in danger, right? It is dangerous to be out there because they can't see anything either. They're basically like out there trying to like just look in front of them. If there's something there, if there's snow there, try to get it out of the way, right? But if there's snow there, kind of is ridiculous because there's snow everywhere. It's all they can see anywhere they look. So they're just trying on this day. Like if you had been waiting, if you had been in Antarctica all winter in the complete black, again, even if you are there with your best friends in the world, yeah, even if you love playing Uno so much and play it every night, even if you love the science and the penguins, if you're just wild about the experience, there's no way that you aren't excited to have new people and excited to go home, yeah, right? Exactly. After all winter long, and just you have like six planes have already landed and you're already working on it. And now like this last plane with 80 people on board is up there flying around. You can't hear them. You can't see them, but you know that they're there and you're just trying to keep the runway clear so that they don't crash even if they find the runway. The crew on the ground are frantic. The crew on board makes pass after pass after pass. They keep flying around and trying to land. And every time they get low, they just don't see anything. They can't see the runway. They can't see the ground. They can't see anything. So what are they? They don't know what they're landing on. They don't know if they're in the right spot. God. It's just incredibly difficult to be precise, right? And precision really matters here.
And it's not like experience could help you in this situation. Like, who has experience landing in Antarctica?
Right. And that's Cliff, the captain, does. This is his third time doing Operation Deep Freeze, but I don't
even
have
three
I,
times.
I don't have any.
Right.
Right. Like, I would not. I've driven to Medina, yeah, my hometown, yeah, thousands of times. And I feel like I'm taking my life in my hand every time that I get behind the wheel.
Right.
Like, it's, yeah. They just have to abort one landing after another, after another, after another, after another, and they're burning more and more and more fuel. And they have not laid eyes on this runway even one time. Not even nothing. Jeez. They've seen nothing. They did this for more than an hour. More than an entire hour of just try after try, God, after try, landing attempt after landing attempt, go around after go around after go around for more than an hour. People are out there trying desperately, literally fighting Antarctica's snow, like the land of snow.
Right. At some point you have to doubt, like, am I actually looking at the ground? Like, am I upside down? Like, what is actually happening?
Right. Right. Cliff is the captain, and like the pilots need to figure something out now, right now. For more than an hour, they have burned through the vast majority of their fuel, and they brought extra fuel because this is a dangerous flight and they wanted to be prepared. The flight engineers say that we've got like one more landing attempt and maybe 15 minutes of holding time. Like, maybe, like, if you want to hold it and just like use that 15 minutes we've been flying around for an entire hour, if you think 15 minutes will make a difference, I don't know, but we've basically got 15 minutes and one landing attempt because the go around burns so much fuel, right, because you have to like rev the engines up to come back away from the ground. They are going to be on the ice one way or another very, very soon. The scientists, God bless them, in the cabin, right? It's very important to note to me that they are in rear facing seats. I would throw up so much. This whole experience would be throw up from fear, throw up from the excitement and fear, throw up from being backwards and having to go up and down constantly. They, Captain makes an announcement. Cliff says, like, we are going to crash land this plane, basically.
Oh, God.
Like, it's happening, right? Like, it's just, there's just, this is the situation.
We're in the middle of a blizzard.
Right? This is going to happen. Yeah. Right. We're going to descend to 100 feet above the ground. If we see the runway, we'll land. BJ, if you see the runway, just take control and land.
Yeah.
Literally, just, if you see the runway, just, it's yours. Like, Godspeed. Like, I just.
Shout it out. Don't be shy.
Right. Right. If they don't see it, we're going to ascend. We're going to just to 500 feet. Go to the, like, air quotes, runway.
Oh, my God.
Over where the Hercules flights landed, yeah. Right? Like, the icy, like, spot where they had landed before. And just retract the gear and land on our belly.
Oh, like, wow.
Because we're going to be on the ground anyway.
Okay.
And so we're going to, basically, this is a description of, like, we're going to keep trying. We're going to try until there's no try left. Yeah. And then we're going to try to just have the plane connect with the ground.
Okay.
Under the best circumstances we can muster.
And I guess that is better on ice. Like, if they're assuming it's really, obviously, it's very, very cold.
Right.
So if they
slide.
Well,
that's just it. If the plane breaks apart.
Right.
If the plane breaks apart, like, yeah, there's just very limited options. Yeah. The scientists in the cabin had been briefed on emergency, like, procedures, right, as part of their training for this flight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the passengers, the scientists, they, like, take anything sharp out of their pockets. They, like, zip up their coats, put on their hats, pull their seatbelt tighter. Yeah. Like, powerless, right? Like, your control, you have, like, control over such small things. And, like, you do them because it is better if you survive a crash landing, it is better not to have a sharp thing in your pocket and to have your hat on, right? But they get down to 100 feet above the ground. Cliff and BJ are just, like, squinting, searching. They're so, so low, and it has to be, like, right here. It has to be close. It's right here somewhere, right?
Right.
But I just think about how your eyes can play tricks on you, and, like, they're just squinting, staring at the ground. BJ yells out, "I see it." Takes control. Cliff trusts him. BJ idles the engines. The plane slams down onto the runway. He did see it. Cliff pulls the thrust reversers on. They slip and slide fast down the runway. The runway, God bless them, those other people, like, the people who'd already been there, they tried so hard to keep this runway clear. They tried so hard. But right now, Cliff and BJ have no idea where they've landed on the runway, right? They know they're on the runway. They just slip and slide down, and bam, the nose of the plane hits a solid ice snowbank that had appeared on the runway. The momentum, they hit, the nose hits the snowbank, which is solid ice. The tail whips around because the momentum is so intense, snaps off the landing gear, just snaps off the one of the wings, and they just keep sliding backwards, just whoop. So now the people, the passengers, the scientists are now forward, and the pilots are, like, pointed the wrong way and at the back, right? So it's just continues to slide backwards, one wing lighter, no more landing gear.
Yeah.
Just their pilots are totally powerless. There's nothing to see because it's just snow.
Jesus.
But now they're not even looking in the right direction. There's nothing they can do about that. the wing slams into another snowdrift, rips the number four engine, number three engine, entire wing.
Oh my God.
The plane stops. The engines on the left wing are still going, even though the cables have been severed. They have like a magnet system that is designed to keep the engines going. Oh. And Cliff is alive. The captain is alive. Thank God. And he shuts them off. And it's just silent.
Oh, God.
And it's silent in a way. I know that some people listening to this probably haven't been in like a blizzard or like a snowy spot before. The snow like muffles the sound. Yeah. And so like the silence in a blizzard is like a deeper silence than I feel like you can experience.
It is truly silent.
So silent. And people begin to like check their bodies.
Oh my God.
And get up. And the emergency procedures they were trained on was to like exit the aircraft, right? So they start to file out of the plane and check on each other, and they're just stepping out into the most extreme cold they've ever experienced, into the blizzard. Everybody lived. Every single one of those 80 people, every single person is alive as they start to like step out into this blizzard. Every single person is alive.
Oh my God.
But where are they? Because even though they landed on the runway, the snow is so thick that they still see nothing around them. Nothing anywhere.
God.
Except they're totally like ripped apart. Peggy, God bless her, except for her, except for each other. Nothing. The people who had been on the ground, the Navy had brought them all inside because they didn't know if Peggy was going to crash. They didn't know.
Right.
They didn't know. And they didn't want the plane to crash into a person out there trying to keep.
Yeah, I mean, it's a blizzard. You can't see anything.
You can't see anything. So at McMurdo Station in Antarctica, there is a crash crew.
Hey, real quick. This is editing Casey. We're going to talk about a lot of things that a man named Ken did. It seems like this might have been a mix-up with a name. We're going to make a lot of references to good old Ken, and it seems like we've probably gotten his name wrong. Unfortunately, we don't know the names of most of the people who are involved in this story, and it seems like that's the case for the man who we're calling Ken throughout this. There was a guy named Ken at the site who absolutely helped out. We just think we got some of the actions and names mixed up.
There are people who part of their job, their responsibility is here in Antarctica.
Yeah.
Is to respond if a plane crashes.
I mean, props to them for planning for that, I guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Ken and Roger are two members of the crash crew, and they're waiting to hear. And again, that like, hear does not mean hear a plane crash. You would think.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you would think any other place on Earth, you would hear it. But they're just waiting to find out because they don't hear anything. They have a canvas covered, like thick military truck running and waiting so that they can spring into action as soon as Peggy is on the ground. they got word that the plane had landed. And they jumped into their truck. Outside, they can't hear or see anything.
Oh, no.
The runway that Pegasus had landed on is not that far, but it doesn't matter. They just can't see anything anywhere. Besides the snow falling, it's getting dark, just regular nighttime darkness. For the people on the plane, especially for the pilots, I mean, they have been like awake and just going for so long. How are Ken and Roger gonna find them?
Right.
At the plane, people are like confused and surprised to be alive. They go through in their cargo. They have emergency kits and tents, but the wind is howling and there's no way you can put up a tent in a blizzard in the wind. It's just not possible. And they kind of look at the plane and they're like, this plane is not gonna catch on fire. Like, it's, there's no fuel anyway.
Yeah, right.
And they climb back onto the plane and just, there's, they just wait and start to freeze. It's so cold. And like, the plane, there's no engines, there's nothing running, there's no heat. They're just in there with their coats, their hats. Ken, in his crash crew truck, is driving toward where they like approximately think the plane might be. The truck has a radar reflector on top, and they communicate with the radio in the station, right? In the actual like main, like McMurdo.
Yeah.
And they drive around the airfield in the blizzard looking for an entire plane.
Right.
Right. Like, under normal circumstances, under almost any other circumstances, you'd be able to hear something, see something, something, right? Yep. Lights, or there's just, they can't, there's no, you can't shoot a flare. There's nothing. There's no way for them to, the people in the plane don't know where they are and can't communicate anything.
Right.
And Roger and Ken are just in their canvas covered military truck with their radar reflector just going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. They can only see like a few feet in front of themselves. Like, there's just nothing, and they can't hear, they can't see, and it's getting darker and the blizzard is worsening, and inside the plane the temperatures are dropping and the survivors are huddled together, and some of them are like small, like sweet, these are scientists, sweet scientists, and God bless them. Some scientists are big burly dudes and some of them are, you know, not, just, and that's fine, but just your body, those, your little body, like, oh no. And they're trying, there's like one particular scientist who's like just so little, he's little, and they're just, he's shaking, and they're trying, they're like, oh my God, we all survived this plane crash, and we, like, this person's gonna freeze to death right in front of us, and then we're gonna freeze to death. It is so scary, and so, like, maybe, I feel like I would be, maybe not because they're scientists, I don't know, but I would be like, did I die and go to hell? Is this just what hell is?
Forever, like, just freezing to death? Yeah.
Oh, right. And Ken drives around and around and around and around, and multiple times he was within just a few hundred feet of the plane.
Oh my God.
But neither of them. This is a loud truck, diesel engine.
Yeah.
No one can't hear anything, can't see anything, back and forth. Mariah, for 4 hours.
No.
For 4 hours. 4 hours.
Oh my God.
Ken and Roger are just back and forth, just trying to systematically, just trying to find this plane. And for 4 hours, everyone in the plane is just huddled together and trying so hard to not freeze to death yourself, to not let someone freeze to death right in front of you. You don't have anything you can do. Ken saw him. He saw the snow has been falling and falling and falling and falling and covering more and more of the plane, but he can see the plane sticking out of the snow. And as Ken and Roger are going back and forth, as time ticks on, it's like makes me nauseous because you would think like you would think that like every minute you don't find them, they're freezing more and more, like, or you don't even know if people are like, maybe everybody was already dead before you even left. Like, you don't know. And they find the plane and they get up to it. And everyone is alive inside. Everyone is still alive. And Ken has a radio and he radios the base and he like is able to like start to describe, okay, like here's where the plane is. And he and Roger drive back and they're driving back and somebody gets out and starts to put like flags in the snow. It's part of like the equipment in the crash car, right? And so they're taking flags and they're putting them in the snow every like 10, 15 feet so that there's a way to like guide a truck, like the trucks back to the plane so they can get 80 people back and forth and get them warmed up and get them safe. And they form the second caravan of the day, this time of trucks going out to the last plane to pick up the people. Ugh. And the blizzard is still getting worse. And Roger's in the crash crew. He's driving the last truck of the convoy, the fire truck. So he's the last truck in the convoy, the last plane. Peggy was the last plane in that caravan. Roger is the last truck in the truck caravan, the rescued caravan, and the flags are 10 or 15 feet apart and they're one right after the other and it's dark and the blizzard's getting worse and worse and worse, and Roger's truck died. It just
died. My God.
The engine, first casualty of the day, second Peggy's, you know, but
yeah, right.
Roger tries to call, right, on his radio to say, like, my engine quit. But his radio isn't working. And he could hear them, but they can't hear him. And they have loaded everybody up into the trucks and gone back. And he can't communicate with them and tell them what's going on. He just is trying to call and it just click, 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 nothing. He doesn't transmit. And he hears them talking to him and they say, like, the blizzard is so bad. It's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse, and it's covering the flags. And they just say, like, stay in the truck. Like, we can't. There's no way to get to you. Yeah. Like, there's no way to get to you, Roger. And frost is like building up on the inside of his truck already.
Oh my God.
With the dead engine. And the other crash crew people, like, fuck off if you think that we're gonna do all of this and then leave Roger out there to freeze to death. Like,
right.
Are you fucking, fuck off.
Right.
Like, goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
They went and picked the loudest diesel truck.
Beautiful.
The loudest diesel truck that they
Smart.
Have. Just like, yeah. Just the loudest thing there. Even though, again, the blizzard is really severe and it's dark, and even with the loud engine, it just muffles everything, the snow all around. And they can't hear Roger on the radio, but they can hear when he clicks. When he tries to transmit, it makes a little click, but his voice doesn't transmit. So they can talk to him, and they said, like, okay, here's the system. Like, if you listen for our engine, the loud diesel engine, and you click, click. If you hear, if we're on the right, if you hear the engine to the right, you give one click. And if it sounds like we're on your left, you give two clicks.
Okay.
Very smart. Love scientists. They went on like that for another hour.
Oh,
for
my
another
God.
Hour. For another hour.
Good Lord.
They click, 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 click. You know, they just
it's very
slowly.
Cold.
Oh my gosh. And they guided and they found. Like it just they see nothing except snow until suddenly they're on top of each other and like there's Roger's truck and they get him out and they put him in their loud diesel truck and they bring him back and everybody did actually live.
Oh my God.
Everybody, all of the, everybody on the plane, everybody who was already there, everybody in the crash crew, Roger and his fire truck that died, everybody lived.
Oh my gosh. That is crazy. That is actually crazy to think. I mean, you and I recently lived through a blizzard and a lot of people died. Like it is, it was 2022. A lot of people died. So it's amazing.
Right.
In 1970 or 70 or whatever year it was, they were able to, they were able to just, wow. That's amazing. That's really incredible. That's so good.
The Navy stopped using the Constellation planes for the South Pole.
Yeah.
They were just like, oh, sweetheart, it's okay. You're done.
Yeah, you're done. You're done.
Phoenix,
it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. You've done good, girls. Like Phoenix, the first plane, they sent back to New Zealand and she delivered mail, which is nice. That's a nice thing to do.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. And they retired her in May of 71. So not too long after. Pegasus is still there right now.
What?
Right now, she is still there, buried in the snow.
Beautiful.
That is how I found out about this flight in the first place. Because,
oh my God.
I have like, I really would like to go to Antarctica. I would. And I very, very tangentially like met somebody like 15 years ago and we were friends on Facebook and it came up on Facebook or whatever that he, I guess, is a scientist now and was in Antarctica. And I was just like, oh my gosh, my hero.
Yeah,
like,
right.
This is the coolest thing ever. And I like asked him about the Air New Zealand flight if like that's anything. Just do you, I don't know. What do we talk about? I'm not good at conversations, I guess. And he's like, I don't know anything about that one, but we visit the Pegasus crash because it's still there and people will just go and like check it out because it's just there.
It's just there, right.
It's
not like
there.
A lot of people
like
are checking it out all the time.
Right. But it's like a,
it's
I don't
like
know,
a
it's
thing
like a,
that's
a
available
location.
For them to check out, right? It's like
exactly.
A very cool
exactly.
Like, tourist attraction on.
Right.
Antarctica.
I don't know if like when you were a kid if there was anything like in the woods. I guess you didn't have woods by you. Yeah, but there's woods around or whatever. And you like maybe somebody like built a like a cabin in the woods in like the 30s and you can just go in like the ramshackle like remains of the it's like I don't know. People like to have a location. It's cool, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just there.
It's
I would check
there,
it out.
Right. Let's go see it. Heck yeah, I want to go see it. Right.
Her
it's one of those things.
Beautiful Pegasus tail. And obviously because everybody loves the desert, but no one loves them more than planes. She's like very well preserved.
Beautiful.
And she's just there. And she's just gonna stay right there.
Amazing.
Because what are you gonna do? You know, like dig her out. God bless her. That's her spot. And
wow.
Operation Deep Freeze ran every year until 1998. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. They kept doing it. They kept doing it. And I mean, there's scientists in Antarctica right now. That it's still, I don't know why they changed the name or whatever, but it's
right.
A different system or whatever, but yeah. So
that's amazing.
everybody lived.
Oh, thank God everybody lived. That would be so, I mean, of course, anytime there's a plane crash, it's tragic, but.
Right. But it's just so.
Because you're just so helpless. Like, there is nobody. Like, yeah, you have the crash crew, but I mean, what are you going to do in a blizzard?
Right. Right. And it's very, very hard to imagine. Like, I struggle so much to imagine what it would be like for those 4 hours where there's like no communication. Right. Between like the people on the plane and like the people who are already there who are looking for them. Like that stretch of time feels like it would be eternity. And everybody, every single person on that continent is wondering if they're going to get there 5 minutes too late, 4 hours too late.
Right.
Just in time. If people are going to have to like have their fingers and like arms amputated or like whatever, right? Like you're just thinking, I just feel like it would be so
function
during that time. Like you don't know if, you don't know when, you don't know how, like you don't know where, like it's just like, and even it would feel so alien, I feel like, to even just be in the truck under any circumstances.
Exactly.
Like driving
right.
around for hours.
Well, just and like the moment universe. You lose heat, you essentially start freezing to death. Like, it's,
yeah.
It's a very slow process, and you basically start it, yeah, the second you don't have access to heat.
Right. Like, the cold is just
eating away at you.
There, right, right. Like, stalking you. Like, just, oh.
Wow. It's what an intro to the country.
Miraculous.
Or the continent, yeah. Rather.
Yeah. Yeah. Holy cow. I don't know. And I don't know if it is. I don't know if anyone knows if, like, everybody on board, like, those 80 people, if all of them, like, if all the scientists stayed for as long as they had intended to, I wouldn't right. blame them one bit if they were like, oop, I'm going to try again next year.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think. Yeah, and it would also just be weird if you survive something like that. I mean, when people talk about surviving any like near-death experience in general, it's a profoundly transformative experience. And I guess that's something too where like if you had like, I'm gonna, you know, whatever, leave, you know, like say goodbye to my family, say goodbye to my like my wife, my mom, whatever, right? Like the people in your life. And like go on this really extreme adventure and then have such a harrowing experience where like you miraculously survive.
Yeah.
I guess I don't know if this is like a complete thought, but it's just, I wonder, I feel like after something like that, I want to like hug my family, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it just seems like it would be so.
Yeah.
It's just an intense experience that I think would be very hard to understand or describe. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. Exactly. Because, I mean, who, like, there are a very few amount of people who actually know what it is like to be to Antarctica.
Right.
Let
under
alone
any circumstances.
Crashing on a plane mm-hmm. in Antarctica.
Wow. Yeah.
And surviving.
It's surviving. Oh,
unbelievable.
BJ, I don't even want to skip it. Let's go back. The first officer.
Truly.
Or co-pilot or what, second officer. I don't know. They have a different names in the military. We're just going to call him first officer. Like.
Yeah.
I mean, clutch.
Oh, my God.
Like, he did it.
Yeah.
He saw it. And I think of those two people, like Cliff and BJ, like. The amount of trust.
Yes, right.
Like the form of trust. Because like I feel like I would be. It'd be really hard. Do you feel like it'd be hard not to second guess yourself? Like,
oh my
just
God,
to be
right.
Like
did I see,
the runway?
Yeah.
Like, just the hesitation and
yeah.
like no hesitation. Like,
right.
Just like
he's like, nope,
yep,
it's there.
Like, bam.
Let's go.
Oh my god.
Because I mean, you have one chance left. Like, you have literally one shot left. And if this isn't actually the runway, you're potentially fucked for
Ever. Right. And I mean, the people who had been out there clearing, trying to clear the snow, I mean, just in Buffalo, like just regular, beautiful, sunny Buffalo, New York, the days, like the handful of days that I worked at the airport when there was like truly a blizzard, like in the middle of the day, Buffalo is like very equipped to handle that situation with like snow plows and all of that. But I remember like more than once where they just truly can't plow it fast enough. By the time you're done plowing it, there's too much snow on the runway again. It's just coming down too hard. And this is that times a billion.
Right.
With way higher stakes and just the
no, and barely any resources. Like, essentially no resources compared to what we have now, obviously.
Right.
And even now, I can't imagine Antarctica has, like, I'm sure it's a lot better, obviously, than the 70s, but it's not. It's certainly not, you know, a full, like, hundreds of planes per day, right?
Right.
Not a lot of people are going to Antarctica.
Right. Right. Even when there's, like, I mean, even someone can correct me, but I'm aware of, like, cruise ships that bring just, like, you know, normal, like, you know, regular people to like see Antarctica. But I don't know. I just don't have personal like knowledge of whether or not there are flights that carry just like, you know, civilians or whatever, not civilians, but just everyday people who are going there for like the pleasure of visiting.
Right. You like, know, can I don't you know just go to have. Antarctica?
You can go on like a cruise, right? The National Geographic cruise.
Yeah.
That my like wonderful aunt and uncle went on, because they're
honestly living the fucking dream. That is my dream, to go on one of those trips.
The dream.
Just imagine. I just want to see what it's like.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Penguins, little buddies.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, you can't just like, I'm gonna buy a ticket to Antarctica.
I don't think that I don't know if you can fly there.
Right.
I don't know if you can. Right. I don't know if there's flights that land there for good reason. Because like on a ship, you're. I think the boats might be a little bit feel more precarious to me than planes under most circumstances.
Yeah.
But they are like, you're there. You're kind of like on, not the ground, but you're on the earth at least.
Right.
Like,
you're on the earth, you know? Somehow. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're attached to the earth.
Right. Right. You're trying to actually like not get too attached to the earth.
Right. Because then you're just in negative space and it's, I can't compute.
Right. But,
wow.
Such a cool story.
What a story.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Deb. And I mean, Casey, to you for retelling it. You guys really pulled that out.
Radiant.
Wow.
Research genius.
I mean, it is. Deb. Anytime I hear of planes and like the 1920s at all, my brain cannot compute.
Oh, right.
Cannot compute. I cannot even imagine what it would be like to be living in the 1920s while also simultaneously living while planes exist.
Yeah.
Like, what are their brains doing?
It's.
And everyone's just on board. Yeah. They're just like, yep, planes are a thing now. Let's fly to fucking Antarctica. Like, let's go.
Right. Let's go over the North Pole.
Beautiful. Right. Perfect.
Yeah. And the Soviets are like, I know what we'll do. And they like marched to the North Pole and put a statue of our boy Lenin right there. Like, just for the ages.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
The aliens will be surprised.
They sure will.
Oh man.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So much.
And what a great story. They all lived.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder
if anyone's still alive. I bet you there are people still alive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Deb, our hero, like, interviewed people.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you can, like, read and listen to everything.
Yeah.
You gotta. Yeah. You gotta.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Though Deb, like, hunted this down.
Very exclusive. Very exclusive story.
Yeah. It's amazing. I don't think anybody, as far as I can tell, she has done original research that has never been done before.
Like, great job, Deb.
Really, yeah. No, she's amazing.
Wow.
And yeah, that. And I am so glad that this is the story that I asked about, because it is such an amazing story, and I can't believe that more people. I mean, I guess because it really did. It took, like, a lot of work on her part to, like, hunt all of these, like, details down and, like, find whatever was possible to find and talk to people and, like, so much cool stuff. I think that in a dream world, like, if possible, I do hope that, like, we can in some way, like, put her, make her research, like, available, because I do think it is, like, research that has never been gathered before.
Beautiful.
And, like, make it available, because it is just amazing.
That is very
cool. There's so many little, I still think, and I will say it again, I think that, like, she could totally, like, write, like, a long form article about it, and, like, The Atlantic would print it. I really think so.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's go, Deb.
Yeah.
Wow.
Deb.
Beautiful. I'm excited to look at all the all the emails and things.
Yeah. And pictures.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
Pictures in my face.
It's really good. Yeah. But so good. But yeah, that's the story.
Damn. They did it.
The big one.
They landed it. They fucking landed it.
They fucking landed it. Cliff and BJ and everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I just only have their names. Yeah.
I know. I wonder how the pilots flew home. They're just like, get me the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Or like,
Cliff is just like, bye.
I hope somebody painted like one more penguin on the door. Right? Just
please.
One.
Please. If
more.
Not, we need to. That's our goal is the pod crashed.
Right. Well, maybe we can like, do you think you can send mail to Antarctica?
Mm-hmm.
Probably. If we send like a sticker, like a penguin sticker. Can you just,
I mean,
would you mind sticking this?
There are definitely like TikTok there's scientists who are on TikTok, not TikTok scientists. Scientists who are on TikTok.
Yes. Real scientists.
Who work at both the North and the South Pole, and they like talk about their time there. So I bet we could like leave a comment and I wonder, or message them and they would answer.
Yeah.
And we can see if there is another penguin on it.
Yes. Just one. Just one more penguin.
We need to follow up.
For year seven. The 1970 penguin. Like,
exactly.
She needs it. Yeah.
You made it. You landed. You got everyone there safe.
She
you
landed.
Did your thing, girl.
She kept everyone alive. She did.
Damn.
She did. She stayed together. The fuselage stuck together.
Can you imagine crashing in a 1950s plane?
No.
Like right now.
I don't
now.
Want to.
Just cannot.
Right. Right. Like on like a nice like evening in like clear weather. No, thank you.
No, thank you. Like, hard pass.
No, thank you.
Let's. Yeah. In the middle of a blizzard. I don't know. They just made things differently, I guess. Beautiful.
It's just. Yeah. She was well constructed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder where the sister plane is. I wonder if the Phoenix plane is like in the desert in California or where it is.
Maybe we can buy her.
Yeah. Oh, I want to.
Yeah.
But at least, I don't know. That's the thing too. I think about like, I think I have a really hard time. I have like a very strong kleptomania streak, and
okay,
that's just the truth.
I didn't know where you were going.
Didn't know where I was going with that. Yeah. Okay, but like I have a very, very deep desire.
Yeah.
I do not steal things, but I want to so badly.
Fair.
And it comes up in things like this where I feel like I want to go to this plane and I want like a piece of it. I want to take it.
Yeah.
And I suspect that in the past, other people must have surely had that same instinct. So I'm really, really, really curious about like what's still in there.
Yeah.
But I want a piece, just a little bit of it.
Right.
But you're not supposed to do that.
You're supposed to just leave it.
I think I might have talked about this before, but at the Petrified Forest out west, like Petrified National Forest or whatever it's called, there's like signs everywhere being like, you can't take pieces.
Right. Yeah. Leave don't it. Touch. Yeah.
You can't do it. Right. And there's a display at like the visitor center of like little bits of like petrified rock or whatever, petrified wood, little bits with like letters where people did take a piece and then felt so guilty that they mailed it back.
Oh,
and like the letters are all like, I took this and I feel so ashamed and I'm sending it back.
Oh,
or like kids, like little boys, like Tommy, age 8. Sorry, I stole this.
God.
It was wrong. Like, here's it back. Like that. I think about that display a lot because of my very strong desire to just take a little bit, just a little piece for me.
Yeah.
But
for me.
You're not supposed to do that because then eventually everybody does it and then there's nothing left.
And then so right,
that's
right,
what you
right.
Shouldn't.
Right.
But I do.
Oh
get
my gosh. That's a great.
So I would like
tactic,
a little piece
so.
Of Peggy. Oh, exactly. That display.
Yeah.
Genius.
Yeah.
I probably would have taken a piece if it hadn't been for that display. Let's just be
right.
Honest.
You're like
I probably would have been like,
they already caught
they
me.
Won't notice.
Right.
Right. But you see like the guilt and shame of people before
yes.
you who are like, stealing is wrong. I'm sorry.
Right.
Return it to the forest.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Stealing from
it's
the earth
really
is
forest,
wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Oh
right.
My God.
Yeah. Do you feel like that? Do you just want to like take a little piece?
Oh, all the time. I mean, I have.
Yeah.
I have multiple like volcanic rocks from different places that I've been where you're like not.
Do they
supposed
say
to.
Are you not supposed to take it?
Yeah, you're not supposed to take it.
I
but
just
it's like,
wanna,
come on,
just
it's gonna
piece.
Keep making fucking volcanic rocks. Let's relax. It's a little baby piece,
yeah.
But that's the whole
just
thing,
the
right?
Little...
It's terrible.
Right. Yeah.
I shouldn't.
There's like a.
I'm not gonna return it though. I'm gonna be flat honest. It's still in my book bag.
I don't even know, like, mail it back to like the volcano.
Like, right. Just, like, what are you gonna do? You're gonna
like,
throw it back in there? You're not gonna. You're
I
just gonna
know.
Be like, okay, this is dumb as shit, and throw it in the garbage. I'm keeping
this
it.
This is real though. My mother, my sweet mother, Karen Ann, has
beautiful.
A little piece of the Berlin Wall.
Oh my God.
I think that's where I got it from. I remember
that?
Her showing it to me and being like, that's the thing to do. You take a little piece because she has like a chip of it.
That is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
It is, right? We've never talked about this?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe.
Oh, maybe not. Yeah.
I feel like I'm hearing
cool.
this for the first time, but maybe not.
Yes, I will show it to you. I remember I like took it to school.
Hell
and
yeah.
I've never in my life been more afraid of losing something.
Yes. Oh
like,
my God.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. How yeah. did, how old were you?
When
you took it to
school?
I
was in fourth grade.
Fourth grade?
It was the year I went to public school. So it was fourth grade.
Were you like,
so 9.
Were you happy to present it to your class? Or were you like,
No, we were not doing show and tell.
Oh, you just took it to school?
I just brought it. Yeah. I was just like, look.
So you wanted to show it.
Yeah, but it's like 1999. None of these other 9-year-olds know what I'm talking about.
Right.
They didn't.
Right,
their middle name isn't Reagan, so
that's
they
fair.
Just have not followed this part of history, I guess, you know. But
okay,
the teacher thought it was cool. The teacher
wow.
liked it. Yeah.
No, that is very but cool.
It is. So, yes, I want a little piece. If you guys, we will not tell. If you send us a picture
nope.
of a little piece of something that you took,
we
will
know it.
Enjoy it, and we won't tell unless you want us to post it
we won't
anonymously
tell.
Or whatever.
And if you're mad at
that
us
be...
for taking stuff, I'm so sorry, but it is what it is.
It's so. It is 100% true that, like, if everybody takes a piece, yeah, then it's bad.
But not everybody is taking a piece. But still don't take a piece. Use your judgment.
Remember, no, I don't know.
No. What is, we're just, we're, the podcast, we're not, is not going to take a strong stance on this.
We are not, and we're not giving any legal advice, so don't.
No.
Call a real lawyer.
Just talking about just the deep human urge to take a little piece. That's all we're talking about.
Because we all know what that urge is. Whether you do it or whether you don't, I think we can all agree that there is an urge.
Yeah. Just,
especially when you're told not to, it's doubled.
I, you know, the John Mulaney joke about, like, his like childhood friend who stole, like, family photos from people's houses.
Oh my
God. He would steal, like, priceless, like, family photos in the frame. He would just take them. That, I'm just like, yes.
Yeah.
I want to do that too.
Yeah. Right.
Like, I don't do that because, no, I don't, but I want to. All right. Tell us about your desire to take a little piece.
Yeah.
Of whatever it might be.
Your secret's
nature,
safe with us.
People. It is. Yeah. Yeah. Oh. But,
wow.
Yeah.
Great story.
Oh, so good. I know that Deb had sent some, like, facts.
Casey, did you know that the fucking Titanic wreckage is owned by someone? Like, someone owns the Titanic wreckage. RMS Titanic Inc. is an American company that owns the salvage rights to the famous wreck that and displays many of the artifacts, blah, 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 blah.
Really?
But they actually own the wreckage. Because, I don't know, have you heard about the submarine that has gone missing?
No.
At all?
Oh, no.
Okay, so there's a submarine that has gone missing. There are, I think, like, 5 or 6 people on board.
No.
They can't find it. And... this was actually going to be my fact, but I could not fact check it quick enough. Like, there's just not enough. I just couldn't fact check it quick enough. But apparently more people have been to space than have been to the wreckage of the Titanic, which feels like a pretty true fact. Like, that feels
true.
Like, I feel like there's a lot of people at the International Space Station. We've been going to space for a real long time. It took us a really long time to find the Titanic. So I just feel like that is probably a true fact. But
That seems true.
Yeah.
I believe it. Certainly.
Right. But a submarine that was doing, like, a tourist, like, I don't know, sightseeing thing at the Titanic. I believe this was the first one that went down. They cannot find it. And as of now, like, with all of the calculations, I guess they only have 40 hours of air left. So they kind of have to find it really soon. Yeah.
No. This was one of the poll questions on Spotify one time because, like, no. Like, nope.
Oh, nope. Right. Yeah. Nope. Like, submarine versus, yeah. No.
In all seriousness, like, I want to live, and I feel like in most circumstances, I'm, like, willing to, like, push through a lot. I
don't
want
know
a
how
side
you could.
Nine tablet.
Yeah.
No. If I'm going in a submarine, I need a side nine tablet. No. No.
That's
what
I mean. It's like it's literally negative space, like, in the earth. Like, you don't.
No.
I don't know.
Mm-mm. That's horrible.
But yeah. So when I was reading about that, it was like a New York Times article where it was talking about the owner of the Titanic wreck. And I was like, what? Wait, like, what does that even, how can somebody own the fucking Titanic wreck? But Paul Henry, I'm not going to, Nargeolet, Nargeolet. He owns the RMS Titanic Inc.
He owns it personally?
Apparently.
Is it just finders keepers? How do you come to own it? Like, do they own it because they found it?
I am very interested in this business dealing. It did not specify. I couldn't find that much about it. Yeah.
Oh, no. All of that, every word out of your mouth.
Yeah, it's
new feelings, new knowledge, new information I didn't have. So much. Like,
it's getting a lot of hate on Twitter because apparently it's being there was a documentary that came out about this particular submarine, and the submarine is being controlled by like a PS4 controller. Like an off-brand PS4 controller. They were trying to like think of better ways, I guess, to drive the submarine. And that was one of them. I don't know, like, I have, I have no idea. I don't know how submarines work, but that is what a lot of people are saying online, joking about, like, you know. Yeah.
No, I don't want to be underwater with literally anything between me and the sky. Like,
and people diving, nothing. Right. Well, and another thing that people are complaining, I mean, life is a life. I don't care. Like, there is no price for human life, but period. People are saying that tickets were going for $250,000. On this thing, and kind of like comparing that to like this guy saying, oh yeah, I'm just like controlling this thing with an off-brand like gaming remote. So it's like it's like a little bit, I don't know, we will see, I guess. And just really hoping that everything comes out okay at the end and they're able to find them, but we will see.
No, there is just, I hope that they're okay.
Yeah.
I will never do an episode about it.
No.
No matter what show we make or no matter how much this changes.
No.
Maybe, no. No. Submarines.
Yeah.
Guys, I would bet literally any... So scary. I'll bet any amount of money that somebody listening to this right now has like been on and like worked on a submarine. It was just like totally like,
it's fine. Yeah.
Like, right. It's like tight quarters or whatever. Right. Like, you know, I know that in the Navy, I think a different one of my uncles, I have like a very nice family. It's so big.
Yeah,
different one of my uncles is like was like a in the Navy, like for his career. And he's very tall. Like my family is very, very tall. And he would talk about like, yeah, it's just very little. Like your space is small, you know, like small bunks, like tight quarters. But the Navy submarines have like the best food in the military because they just like need something to keep morale up, basically.
Oh, yeah.
So they've got like, they try to like make the food really nice, which is a good idea because like, no. First, like, no,
right,
it's a flat, hard no for me, but, yeah, like, give me, you know, whatever, Pop-Tarts and salad or whatever nice food means, you know, in the military, like, if it's gonna be, no, thank you.
Yeah.
No.
So we will see.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for joining me on this very long episode, Mariah.
Thank you for telling it, and thank you, Deb, for all of the research, truly.
Yes. Everyone say beautiful. Thank you to Deb. Yeah. And if any mistakes were made, they were mine and not Deb's, and we will correct them, so be sure to listen to like the little after part of this episode. And once again, there is like so many like updates in our life, but maybe this isn't the episode for them. Right. I don't know. A lot's happening, guys. A lot is happening.
A lot is happening. Maybe will update you soon, I promise.
Yeah. We should just do like a little upload, like of a like,
yeah, maybe we'll do that next week. This is like a nice,
we should. Yeah.
This is a nice hearty episode, and then next week we can do something lighter.
Yeah. We love you guys. And we're gonna keep the thing is like the show is gonna keep coming out. Like we're gonna keep doing it.
We're not
it's
done.
Just like
yeah.
We're just in like a little chaos moment. You know what I mean?
And there's a lot going on in our lives, and we just got to figure it out.
I love you.
I love you so much.
We love each and every one of you.
Yes.
You're all the best. I love you, Deb.
Yes.
Yeah. See you next weekish.
Yeah, sounds good. Love you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of The Podcrashed. We so hope you enjoyed it. This is such a long episode. If you're here for corrections, I'm so sorry. There are not going to be corrections right now. If you're listening to this and you're hearing this, it means the corrections have ended up somewhere else. There are going to be corrections in the description, and I'll continue to update that. And if I was better at this little hobby, I would do that for all the episodes. But maybe someday. If you notice something and you want to get in touch with us for any reason, you can email us at thepodcrashed@gmail.com or find us on Instagram and TikTok. What a whirlwind it's been, guys. We love you to death. Thank you so, so, so much for your kindness and grace. I mean, we talk about the submarine, so that tells you A, when we recorded this, but B, just how little I'm keeping up on everything. So thank you, as always, for your grace, your patience, your love, your kindness. We love you, and we'll see you next week-ish. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.